Blog Talk Radio.
This is Dr. Hank, and you're now listening to the Dr. Hank Show. The Dr. Hank Show is all about EI. And if you're asking, what is EI, then this is the place to be. Because EI is emotional intelligence. Now, I know some of you use the term EQ in reference to emotional intelligence, and that's okay. That's okay. Because that's how we... Well, that's how most of us know emotional intelligence, by the letters EQ. But I use the term EI, and here's why. When I think EQ, that's knowing about emotional intelligence. EQ is the knowing, and EI is the doing, and that is putting emotional intelligence to work, making emotional intelligence work for you, rather than against you. And you say, what was that? Yeah, when I think emotional intelligence, I'm just thinking our emotions. And if we're intelligent about our emotions, we can get our emotions to work for us rather than against us. And I'm going to give you an example of what I'm talking about. Last week, I was down in New Orleans, and I was doing a presentation in New Orleans at a conference called BIG, B-I-G, which stands for Blacks in Government. And Blacks in Government is made up of, 99% federal employees. And the rest is probably state, local, city, and probably even at a nonprofit level, okay? But the majority of the attendees were from the federal sector. And when I use the term emotional intelligence to that group, most people had known about or was familiar with the EQ side, not necessarily the EI side. And I essentially told them that there were four kinds of people when it comes to emotional intelligence. There is the group that don't know about emotional intelligence and don't use emotional intelligence. The second group of people is those that know about emotional intelligence but don't use emotional intelligence. They know and they don't use. And those are folks that have gone to seminars, workshops, and they've read a lot of information. They know all about it, and when someone asks them a question or someone visits their office or whatever, you see all kinds of, pamphlets, books, CDs, whatever around emotional intelligence. But when you talk to their coworkers or friend or associates, the answer is, yeah, they know a lot about it, but, I don't see them using it. Or they are not someone who works well with his or her team, or they hardly ever demonstrate empathy towards anyone. Or, in other words, they know, but they don't use. Now, there's a third group, and the third group is similar to the first group. That is, They don't know anything about emotional intelligence, but they use it. And you're probably saying, well, now how can that be? How can they not know but use? Well, think of it this way. There are people who are really, really sharp around things. Okay. Think about it, you know, like there's a little kid that maybe he's 3 years old or 4 years old, and he can play the piano and rival or play a Beethoven, a Bach, or someone like that, you know, and haven't taken any classes or anything, but he or she is musically inclined. Or there are people who can speak a foreign language, and they can speak multiple languages, and they learn those languages at a really, really early age. And for some of us grown-ups, it's tough to learn, you know, just one language. So some people have an affinity for foreign languages, okay? That's a natural ability. The same with there are people who are naturally use the skills around emotional intelligence. And then finally, there's that fourth group. That fourth group is where I would like to see everyone. And that's what the Society of Emotional Intelligence is about. It's about knowing and using. The fourth group is a group that knows about emotional intelligence and they use emotional intelligence. So, which group do you fall into? The not knowing and not using? The using but not knowing? The knowing but not using? Or the knowing and the using? Well, when we talk about emotional intelligence, I'd like to see everyone at the knowing and the using level. But anyway, I was talking about, that was a point that I made last week when I was at the conference, the big conference. Actually, the name of the presentation was Emotional Intelligence, Your Competitive Advantage for Career and Personal Success. In other words, the focus was on how an individual can develop his or her emotional intelligence for a career or personal success. In other words, their emotional intelligence can be their edge, that thing that makes them stand out above, let's say, someone else. And when I talk about that edge, or when I talk about competitive advantage, well, that's kind of where we're going to be going today with our guest. Our guest is Carl Davis, and he'll be on shortly. But the topic of the discussion for today is driven mindset, boosting your emotional intelligence for optimal performance. So I think that ties very well with what I was talking about at the conference last week, and that was using emotional intelligence for a competitive advantage. So I'm not going to keep on yakking while we have our guest standing by waiting to come on the line. So let me just check and see if Carl is there. Good morning. You're on with Dr. Hank Show. Carl, are you there?
Yes, I am. Good morning, Dr. Hank. How are you?
Fantastic. Fantastic. Thank you. And thank you for setting aside time to spend time with me today. I really appreciate it.
Oh, not a problem.
Good.
Thank you for allowing me to be here.
Oh, yes. Well, you know, I was just kind of sharing with our audience that my presentation last week was around emotional intelligence, your competitive advantage for career success. And lo and behold, your topic today is driven mindset, boosting your emotional intelligence for optimal performance. So I'm going to go out on a limb and say those two kind of tie together somewhat. Is that close?
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, good. Whew. I was out on a limb there, and I'm glad you said absolutely. That made me feel better there, because I was looking at that and I was thinking, yes, you know, I see a lot of similarities to that. So let me there are probably some people out there that are listening that probably, well, they're probably saying, well, who's Carl Davis? So let's take a few minutes, Carl, if you don't mind, and just kind of introduce yourself, you know, just kind of share a little of your background with our listeners so that they kind of know from where you come and the information that you might be sharing with us this morning.
Certainly. I am from the Tampa Bay area, and I grew up most of my life here. I come from a law enforcement career for about 31 years. I'm now retired right now, and I enjoy doing a lot of volunteer work right now, and that kind of keeps me busy. So I'm not sitting up on the porch, as one would say. When I think about when I think about the emotional intelligence coming from my career background, I can see that it was definitely necessary that we use emotional intelligence every day.
Wow. Well, I'm not going to get into a discussion about law enforcement and emotional intelligence, because obviously there's plenty of press out there about, you know, whether it's being used or underused or not used or anything like that. Actually, I want to try and get us looking at maybe something a little different from a different perspective, and that is around a driven mindset. Yeah. And just kind of see where that leads us. So let's just kind of jump right into this. And when I see the topic, driven mindset, boosting your emotional intelligence for optimal performance, where did that sort of title come from? Give me a little background on that.
The driven mindset is really about giving your best. Your desirable moment at that time should be able to meet certain expectations. And so when you start looking at the driven mindset of individuals, these are the individuals that excel in their particular careers, in their lifestyle, in just about everything that they do, because they know that what they are basically getting involved with, it's important mm-hmm. that they give their optimal best.
Well, so how does one prepare? And I'm just going to take it just a little bit further. When we say driven mindset, and then you say that they are optimally prepared, how do they do that? I mean, how do they, you know, become focused so that that becomes sort of at the top of the hierarchy, if you will? Where does that come from?
One, they need to be present in their surroundings. They need to be able to notice sometimes the little things that's happening around them. Being alert is critical in today's world. They need to be able to sense individuals' emotions and the impact that they are having on them. So when you look at having that driven mindset, you have to be aware of your surroundings. You have to be attentive and aware of other people's emotions. You have to understand that when you are emotional yourself, how that may have an impact on the individuals and their productivity.
Okay. Well, that's beginning to sound like one of my favorite topics, of course, and that's emotional intelligence. So,
absolutely.
So why is emotional intelligence an important skill to learn then? Based on what I'm hearing about the driven mindset, why is EI, and I call it EI, an important skill to learn?
Well, one of the reasons why it's an important skill to learn is that we live in a dynamic world and things change all around us. The emotional intelligent individuals need to be able to adapt to those changes. They need to be able to look at their certain skill set to see how they're using those skills to the best of their ability.
Okay. And when you say adapt, that sounds like flexibility there. But, you know, give me an example of maybe someone adapting to their surrounding. Let's say if we're looking at, and I'm going to use kids, because kids seem to be a lot more adaptable than grown-ups in this case. So if we're talking about adapting, how might that show up if we're talking about kids as an example?
kids are pretty resilient anyway. But when they're out playing, when they're in the school environment, let's just take school just began. And that
okay.
could be a very traumatic experience for some kids, as they've probably never been around that many people their size before.
Right,
so when
when
a child is placed in an environment like that, the child needs to be productive, and the child needs to be able to understand what's going on around him, him or her.
Mm-hmm.
And so when it comes down to children, being able to adapt really lessens the tension and the stress that that child is experiencing. And it also allows the teacher to be able to train or teach that student about
mm-hmm.
the lessons moving forward. So adaptability for kids is extremely important.
Okay, now when you mention that in terms of, you know, kids and, let's say their first day in school or second day in school or whatever, they're just starting and they probably hadn't been around that many kids their same size ever. You know, I was reflecting back on, I can't remember back when I first started, but I do remember, you know, that was very traumatic for me to go to school first day. And there's this big old place, you know, kids all over the place, you know, all different sizes. And when I'm saying size, I'm meaning like first grade, second grade, third grade, because, you know, you're in elementary school. And yeah, I mean, you're seeing kids from that you've never seen before. And so being able to adapt, I think, you know, I don't know if I did it well or not, but, you know, I do remember I was somewhat afraid because I didn't know what to expect. My mom had told me what, you know, how to look out for this and look out for that. But still, you know, when you're walking in there for the very first day or two, most kids, I think, you know, would have some high levels of anxiety. I don't know that, but, you know, I'm just talking about based on my experience. Wow. So you're saying that.
Well, I could.
Go ahead.
I can tell you, having a child of my own actually go through that experience, you know, they will tell you about some of their emotions. And they'll talk about the big kids, the kids who perhaps push them around, the kids that are probably smarter and faster and quicker than them. So kids can be very expressive in their language, especially if they're going through a moment like that.
Wow. You know, I guess once you become a grown-up, you kind of push all of that in the background, because, you know, when you're mentioning that, now I'm having, I don't want to say flashbacks like I'm on drugs or something, but I am having thoughts of how it used to be, how it once was, and that was a traumatic environment experience. Now, but, you know, enough about me and my experience then. What profession would you require, you know, that you think that would require someone to be excellent at managing their emotions or the emotions of others?
I know we talked earlier about law enforcement during my introduction, but I would say just about every profession. You have your first responders, you have your teachers, your educators, you have your advocacy groups that are out there, the legal individuals
mm-hmm.
that are out there serving us every day. You have your clergymen and clergywomen. You have your healthcare practitioners, and even your
mm-hmm.
entrepreneurs, and especially your social workers. So just about every profession out there needs to be aware on how to manage their emotions.
Wow, that sounds like a, and if I was into what we call it in marketing, I'd say that sounds like a good segue to my latest book titled EQ is for Everyone. That's what I'm hearing you say, is that it doesn't matter what one's profession is, is that it's pretty important for them to be able to utilize the skills of emotional intelligence. Is that on point?
You're right on point, Dr. Hank. You don't want to slight anybody, because no matter where you go, you're generally encountering anyone from a number of professions.
Mm-hmm.
Even the individuals that where you shop, where you go buy your clothes, it doesn't matter. Every profession, doesn't matter who, how hard they rank up in terms of their financial aspects, but every profession really needs to be aware of how using their emotional intelligence affect others.
Wow. Well, you know, I think then we have a challenge, a big challenge ahead of us. Now, you say that you're retired, but you're not sitting in a rocking chair, rocking back and forth and just kind of passing the time away, that you're pretty active, you know, involved in the communities and other kinds of activities. So what have you seen in terms of being out there where, let's say, emotional intelligence could really be maybe put to use in the volunteer work that you're doing?
Oh, certainly. You need those soft skills, those communication skills, bring those character traits with you. All of those are important, especially when you're going through the different dynamics of each one of those entities that you're engaged in. You've got to be able to understand that the people that you're working with really want you to be successful, and you want them to be successful as well. And I believe the only way you're going to do that is that you allow each other to be expressive and being able to understand where each individual is coming from. So soft skills and those social skills are extremely critical to use when you're out volunteering.
Wow, yeah, because, one, you're out there because you want to be out there, for one, and two, you're not getting paid, so the skills then that it seems to me, anyway, the skills that would best be applied are the ones that you can bring that doesn't necessarily cost you anything to employ or demonstrate, and those could be those soft skills that you're talking about. Now, what are some of the ways that you've heard people, because now this happens, you know. Like, I'm a big proponent of emotional intelligence. Maybe a lot of our listeners are proponents of emotional intelligence, or advocates of emotional intelligence. But there are some people out there that may dismiss the importance of developing emotional intelligence. So what are some of the things that you may have heard, or what may be some of the ways that you've heard people dismiss the importance of emotional intelligence?
That's a great question. Most of the time, people think all you need to do is just show up. Well, that's not necessarily the case. And sometimes you may hear, well, you may not necessarily need those social skills like we talked about earlier. You may not necessarily need those communication skills, especially if you're working here. You may not need to bring certain character traits, especially if you're working this job. So people tend to just sort of push it aside and say, just show up for work and do your job, and that will be all that is needed.
Mm-hmm.
And then some individuals may say, well, you don't need to bring your emotions to work anyway. Leave them at home. And other people might say, well, if you're a good person, then it should be easy for you to adapt to other people's behavior styles.
Wow.
And sometimes you're either born with strong social skills or you're not. You know, so it is almost like when we're talking about emotional intelligence, it's like it doesn't play any part sometimes in the workplace. But we know there is a difference.
Yeah, well, one of the things, you know, I was sharing early before you came on was that I was at this conference last week, and one of the things we were talking about was, you know, the application of emotional intelligence. And so one of the things that we talked about was the fact that there are times when a person may feel, you know, I just graduated from college with a 4.0 in IT or 4.0 in whatever the subject is. Well, he or she may not be the only person that graduated with a 4.0. As a matter of fact, when the employers are out there looking to make a decision to hire people, they probably look for the strongest candidates in the IQ side or the 4.0 or the grade point average side. So they're looking, they go, well, let's go find the 4.0. So they go out and they find as many 4.0s as they can because they want that technical skill. Most organizations hire for the technical skills. But they're only going to hire one person, but they get 25 people with 4.0s and good technical skills. So the question then becomes, what differentiates you or a person from the other 4.0s or from the other ones that have high IQ skills? And believe it or not, you know, there's been research done on that, and you've probably seen some published data around that, is that, you know, the employers, they have to decide. So they look for something called soft skills. Yeah. And they may not call it soft skills. They may just simply call it communication skills, or they may call it teamwork skills, or they may call it the ability to get along with others skills, or they may call it the ability to manage conflict skills. All of those skills relate very well, very closely to emotional intelligence. So I was sharing with the group that employers are looking for emotional intelligence. In other words, they hire for EI, they retain for EQ. I mean, they hire for IQ, they retain for EQ. And so when we were talking about some of the ways that you've heard people dismiss the importance of developing, you know, their EQ, usually those people are already in the workplace. And a lot of time they go, well, I got this job. Now I don't need to worry because my boss, you know, he or she should recognize that, you know, I know what I'm doing, that I'm good at, you know, turning these switches or opening this valve or making this run or stacking these boxes, whatever it is that they're doing. But the employer is looking for more than that. So in the work that you've done in the past, would you say that there were times when the organization was looking for more than just the technical skills?
Oh, absolutely. You know, employees right now are looking at individuals that can perceive emotions and understand them, and then how to go about managing those emotions. They're also looking for, you know, individuals that significantly contribute to a healthier workplace culture. And generally those people have a high level of EQ. One of the things that when I look back is that when you were in the workplace, you, depending on how you handle situation and incidents, can have a dramatic effect on the outcome of a situation. And so it's important for you to understand what you bring to the table should be those soft skills that's necessary in the workplace.
Okay. Well, you know, we tout how important this emotional intelligence thing is, you know, like it's gold or like it's diamond or whatever. What I'd like to hear sometime is examples of it having worked, you know, with this organization or having worked with that organization or having worked with this individual, having worked with that individual. So let me throw this one out at you. How does having strong emotional intelligence affect you, an organization, or a team?
One of the things that's going to affect when it comes down to your emotional intelligence is that when you start talking about you, the individual,
okay,
emotional intelligence will affect the way you show up for work. It will determine whether or not you're ready for that work. Remember that optimal performer needs to be able to perform at their best under specific conditions.
Mm-hmm.
And so when we start looking at individuals with high emotional intelligence, when you show up for work, you've got to be able to look at yourself from different angles to see how well you'll be able to adjust. What's really important is that when you start relating or dealing with the community around you, you've got to give your very best. You've got to be alert. You've got to be able to problem solve. You've got to be able to look at your particular style and see how your skills are making the best of a situation. So that's also critical in the workplace.
Okay. 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 So what about an organization?
Organizations really see emotional intelligence in their bottom line. They see how the financial picture of their organization tends to grow because people are working together.
Mm-hmm.
They understand that a strong culture, most people respect each other. Individuals respect the management and they respect each other to the extent that they know exactly what needs to get done.
Okay.
They discuss things in a very peaceful-like manner because it's very important if you understand where I'm coming from, and I can best serve your needs, then you're going to be a lot more cooperative in that sense. So in the organization, it's very highly critical that we understand each other's emotions and how emotions play in the workplace culture.
Okay. And lastly, how does emotional intelligence, strong emotional intelligence affect the team then?
Teams are extremely important in the workplace because these are individuals who are compartmentalized to really get and drive that organization forward.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody brings a certain dynamic to the team, and being able to understand each other is very critical to the extent that if I know that what I'm saying to you doesn't work well for you, I've got to be able to perceive that. Because when you're moving forward, having those differences in opinions, those differences in the way we see each other, can affect the entire team.
Okay.
And so when we start looking at how we can relate to one another and discuss these issues out front, then we'll be better equipped at moving forward, especially doing teams.
Wow. Well, you know, that relates, you know, hearing that, it reminds me, relates to the decision-making piece. And that was another piece that I kind of stressed last week during presentation that I was making, the role of decision-making or emotional intelligence and decision-making. And so I asked the question to all of the attendees and, let's say hypothetically, all of the listeners out there right now, if I ask the question, have you ever made a decision based on your emotions? Well, I would say most of the hands would go up. And then if I ask the second question, how many of you wish that you have made a different decision? I would imagine a lot of hands would go up again. And then the third question that I had for the group was, if you had another way or a surefire way of improving your decision making, would you use it? And again, a lot of hands went up. And what that was about was how we can use emotional intelligence as a part of our decision making. Now, I know there are a lot of people who think in terms of decision making as taking, you know, the 5-step decision making model or the 3-step decision making model or the 6-step decision making model. And that's all important. because that is the logical way to make decisions. But we make decisions mostly based on our emotions. As a matter of fact, research tells us that if we're looking at how our decision made, 80% is made on emotions, only 20% is based on logic. And with that in mind, all you got to do is think about when the last time you bought a car. You may have had all kinds of things that you said was going to be really important for you to get that car, like the price had to be not exceeding X number of dollars, or you may have said that it had to get X number of miles to a gallon of gas, or you may have said, you know, it has to do any number of things from a technical perspective. But when you got there, when you got to the showroom and you were talking to the salesperson, one of the first things that that salesperson wanted you to do was take that car for a road test. And the reason they want you to take it for a road test is because they want you to see how the car feels, because that's what you're going to make your decision on, how it felt, how it cornered, how it accelerated. Absolutely. So when we're talking about strong emotional intelligence and how it affects you, how it affects the organization, how it can affect the team, that's where decision-making comes in. The more emotionally intelligent you are in terms of utilizing those skills in the decision-making process, the better the decisions are going to be. And that was something that, again, a lot of the people at the workshop or at the conference weren't prepared to hear. They hadn't thought of it that way. But it clearly is a big part of decision-making. Anyway, you're the guest, and I'm doing all the talking, so we want our guests to kind of share what's on his mind and what he was prepared to share and talk about. So let me ask you this one.
I think, Dr. Hank, when you were talking about making those decisions, you've got to be able to trust your intuition. You've got to be able to trust your decisions and know that moving forward, that if you are aware of your decision-making processes, then move forward with them. Because one part of that emotional intelligence is regulations.
Yes.
I think you know when you're going too far with a decision and you need to back off and reassess. But as you're moving along, you're still sort of staying in tune with your environment and using those emotions to be able to drive those decisions. But as you're staying in tune, you should be aware of how that's having an impact on that decision making. So that's a very good point you were making earlier.
Yes, absolutely. You know, the work that's being done around that in decision-making and emotional intelligence says that essentially we have three minds, M-I-N-D-S. We have three minds. We have the rational mind or the logical mind, and that's where we kind of base things on facts and figures and, you know, the data. But we also have the emotional mind, and that's based on that intuition that you're talking about and that thing called trust and that thing called feelings. And so we have that emotional side. And what we really, really need to do is put both of those things together and sort through them. And it doesn't take long to do that and sort through them. And then we apply what we call the wise mind. The wise mind looks at the rational side and the emotional side and say, now that I've weighed these things, what is the best way to go? What is the best decision to make? Knowing what I know, having looked at the rational side, having looked at the emotional side, what should I do? And here's what I'm going to do. And that's where that decision really gets made. Because you've looked at both sides of the coin. Now, some people call it pros and cons, but I don't go that far. Because when we talk about pros and cons, there are pros and cons to everything. And whatever, it's more like pros and pros and cons rather than pros and cons. In other words, whatever there's cons to, there are also pros to that same thing. So there are pros and pros and cons. But let me go back to where we were earlier, and that is talking about emotional intelligence and everything from that perspective. What's the most disturbing part about machines? Now we're getting into what some people are looking at as AI or artificial intelligence. But for you, what's the most disturbing part about machines, robots, computers developing the capacity to read and respond to our emotions?
Well, unless you are really ready for what's coming around the corner in terms of new technology, that can be a little bit of concerning, because they're making devices right now that are able to read your emotions, and they're getting closer and closer. Now, while these computer-related devices are really towards being able to understand you a little better in terms of what your needs are, what your wants are, how you look at advertisement, how you walk inside your home, in terms that technology is evolving right now. And so the human element is now being taken away from it, and computers is driving that. So I can understand the technology that's driving us forward, but being able to really just accept that a computer can actually read your emotions, that's a little forward for me. I take it that as I continue to grow and understand how these devices will alter our lifestyle, then I might be more accepting of it. But I'm sure it's an individual choice right now.
Okay. No, and expanding on that just a little bit, I know that there are what we call face recognition software out there that, that does a great job of that. So much so until it can pick up, our buying habits. There's research that's being done where they flash, certain, let's say, items. Let's say that you're in a grocery store and there's, let's say, Rice Krispies and sugar frosted flakes and maybe a third, type of cereal or something like that. And then they look at the facial expression of the subjects when they flash these three types of cereal there. And the one that gives the most positive response, they take that data, they file it away, and they use it as a way of marketing or stocking shelves. In other words, one of the things is that if I gave a more favorable response visually to, let's say, Rice Krispies than I did to the others, then that's maybe an indication that I might have a preference for that. So then they might put those in a more visible place in terms of stocking the shelves. That's one of the things that they do in stores. They put things on the lower shelves, they put things on the middle shelves, and they put things on high shelves. The items that they really feel are going to go, they put them at about eye level, so that when people pass by, they see it almost immediately, and they make a decision or they select it. Things that don't move well, they go down on a much lower shelf, sometimes even a bottom shelf, or they put them on an upper shelf that's above whatever our vision. So they are really looking at it. And this is just when we're talking about shopping in the grocery stores. They do the same thing with clothing stores. They do the same kinds of things with cars, And when they're selling homes, you hear all about something called curb appeal. Again,
absolutely.
That's decision making based on emotions. They're looking at how can they tap into our emotional side in order to get us to make a purchase. Like I said earlier, 80% of our purchases are based on emotion, 20% based on facts or based on logic. And that probably isn't going to change anytime soon. But anyway,
I would say this.
Go ahead.
Yeah, absolutely. Those individuals, the pioneers that are out there that are doing some excellent work in the field of emotional intelligence, they are making our lives a little more easier. They're making items more accessible. They're driving forward teams, and we're adapting to the different changes.
Mm-hmm.
We're facing a whole new world out there, and emotional intelligence is actually driving that forward. And so when we start looking at emotional intelligence as a tool or a quality,
okay,
then I think we're going to be in good shape. And I believe that individuals should strive to be more emotional and intelligent so they can understand how they too can impact the world around them.
Okay. Well, Carl, let me be the first to say I know that probably we have listeners out there that may have wanted to call in and maybe ask a question or two. If we still have a little time left, but I'm going to throw it open to our listeners. If there's anyone out there that's listening and wants to call in and has a question for Carl or myself, please feel free to do so. The number to call is 929-477-1423. That's 929-477-1423. You've made a lot of good points, and I'd really like to thank you for taking time to be on the show today. Any final comments, thoughts, any information that you'd like to kind of share?
Certainly. We should every day strive to have a driven mindset. I think if you're giving your best under certain or specific conditions, that's all a person can ask for. So if you're the individual that's moving forward, that's making strides in your life and your career, having that driven mindset will pay off in huge number of ways. And individuals that are experiencing you will certainly enjoy the way you make them feel and what you're doing for the society around you.
Wow, that's great. Well, thanks for that. You know, sometimes we have listeners that says things like, well, you know, the speaker that you had on the other day, you know, I really want to be able to reach out to them, you know, find out more about them, maybe even get them to come in and talk to our group or get them to maybe share some of those words of wisdom with our folks. Is there a way for, let's say, for people to reach you if they want to get more information?
Certainly. I can be reached at my email address. That's going to be kadavis@fisttime.com. That's kadavis@fisttime.com. And a number that I can be reached is area code 813-906-9184.
Fantastic. Carl, again, let me say thanks a lot. I really appreciate you taking time with it. As a matter of fact, I think an applaud would be appropriate right about now.
Thank you, Dr. Hank, for allowing me to share with you today.
And thank you, and I look forward to talking to you in the future. And thanks for being on the show today. I really appreciate it.
All right. Thank you. Have a wonderful day.
Thanks. This is Dr. Hank. You are listening to, or you have had the pleasure of listening to, Carl Davis. And really, you know, we probably don't think about this concept of a driven mindset, but I just want to take a minute or so, and just reemphasize the fact that anything that we are looking at doing, we should be putting 100% of ourself or our thoughts or our mind, our energy or whatever into it. And I'm just following up on what Carl was sharing with us, and that is going into things with a driven mindset. If you go into it with a driven mindset, it means you're giving it your all. So when we're talking about emotional intelligence, that's another area in which I want you, our listeners, to give your all. As we used to say on the street, don't half step. In other words, don't do a halfway job, or don't just say, well, I'm going to try. Do more than try. Give it your all. That's that driven mindset that Carl was talking about. So I really want to go out on a limb and say again, I really appreciate him taking the time to share those thoughts with us this morning. You know, another area that we didn't have a chance to get to talk about is maybe the application of emotional intelligence in speaking. That's another area that Carl has spent time in with, and that's with Toastmasters. So we didn't get a chance to talk about that. Maybe I'll invite him back on the show in, let's say, in a few weeks or a month or so, and we'll talk about it from that perspective also. Just want to share a few things with you as we're winding down the hour. Some things that's coming up. We're having a webinar conference. The Society of Emotional Intelligence is having a webinar conference. Now, what's a webinar conference? Well, it's more than one webinar. It's more than one webinar. Actually, we're having three webinars back to back to back, all occurring on the same day. One is at 11 a.m. Eastern Daylight Time. Another is at 12 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. And a third will be at 1 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. And those are three different ways of looking at emotional intelligence by three different presenters. You can't ask for more than that. Well, you probably could ask for more than that. But what I'm saying is that promises to be a great three-part webinar. And if you haven't registered for it, I'm encouraging you to go online, register for it now, because we only have a limited number of seats. And if you don't get a seat for it now, you might be left out. And no one likes to feel left out. So the best thing to do is just go register for it now. And where you register and how you register, go to our website, societyofei.org. Societyofei.org. Go to the conference page, and the first thing that you'll see on the conference page is these webinars. And these three webinars are presented by three different people. One is one of our chairs, that's the chair of the New York chapter of the Society of Emotional Intelligence. Her name is Dr. Lynn Davidson. You won't want to miss that one. Then we have a second one that's being done by Shanae Marsh. She's the chair at our chapter in South Florida. And then a third is being done by Matt Perlstein, and he's in Southern California. Maybe it's Northern California. Northern California, okay. But there's going to be three great webinars. And I know you're wondering, what is the cost? Well, the cost for those webinars. The webinars, all three, not one, all three, is only $79. So you register for all three, it only costs $79. If you only want to listen to one or see one, it's still $79. So you might as well get the most for your money, and that is get all three webinars, and it's only $79. Now, you can't beat that. Most groups of most webinar systems were charging upward of $100 plus for one webinar. And through the Society of Emotional Intelligence, is only $79 for all three webinars. Again, how do you register? Where do you go? You go to societyofei.org, societyofei.org. Log in, go to the conference page. You'll see those three webinars sitting there. It also gives you some information about the speaker, about their background. So their bio is there. You can also click on one of the links, and I think it takes you to the LinkedIn profile of the individual. So you get to find out a lot about the individual, plus you get to find out or get an overview of what they're going to be presenting and also what some of the objectives are. And I think the objectives are listed there. There are at least three or more objectives for each one of the webinars. Again, the webinars are about 45 minutes to an hour. So you're going to get three webinars for $79. So don't miss it. I want you to sign up for that. Do it today. Don't wait until next week or next month. Do it today. Now, the webinars are not going to be presented until October 19th. But I can guarantee you, by October 19th, all of the seats will be gone. All of the seats will be gone. So now is your time to sign up for those. Okay. The other thing I want to share with you is that for people that are in the Virginia area, we're forming a new chapter. It's SOEI Virginia. SOEI Virginia. So if you're in the Virginia area and you've always wanted to be a part of the Society of Emotional Intelligence, now's the time to do that. Go to our website, go to the membership page, and that's where you apply for membership. And when you apply for membership, based on your address, if you're in the Virginia area, we're automatically going to assign you to the Virginia chapter. And if you just want to reach out to who the chair is there, well, the chair is Sarah Spradling. Sarah Spradling. So if you're not familiar with that name, Google her or go to the LinkedIn site or go to our website and you'll find some information there. If you don't see any information about the upcoming Virginia chapter, send me an email. Send it to Dr. Hank, the Dr. Hank Show at gmail.com. The Dr. Hank Show at gmail.com, and I'll give you all of the information on that. But I'm really, really, really excited that we're going to be opening a chapter of the Society of Emotional Intelligence in Virginia. I've known Sarah for probably about 3 or 4 years. Very interesting, a former officer in the Marine Corps and dynamite person, does a lot of great work in and around the area of emotional intelligence, will be a great leader for that chapter. So, Sarah, if you're listening, thank you for listening. I'm going to have her on in a couple of weeks to talk about getting that chapter going, and that'll be a good time if you want to tune in and just kind of talk to the new chair of the new chapter. So if you want to be a founding member of the Society of Emotional Intelligence chapter in Virginia, go to our website, societyofei.org, go to the membership page and sign up. When you sign up, I'll be putting you in touch with Sarah, and I'm sure she's going to be looking to fill some positions like, you know, programs and a secretary and communications and membership. So get involved. Don't wait. Do it today. Lastly, I was going to share with you that there are those people who said, when is the next EQI 2.0 certification? Well, if you missed the one that we just had in Orlando, don't worry. We have another one coming up. It'll be October 12 and 13. In Orlando, Florida. So again, go to the website, societyofei.org, and you can sign up for that one. This is Dr. Hank saying thanks for being with us. Have an EI day.